Any other homeworks, please turn them in. One thing you can do with the chain rule is break it into cases, right? If you have a power rule, you can, so if the outer function is a power and then the inner function is whatever, basically there's only so many different outer functions we consider in this course, right? We take powers, we take logarithms. Take exponentials. Those are really the only kinds of composite functions we look at. I mean, square roots and reciprocals are powers too. They're just fractional and negative powers. So. So one way to approach it is just to recognize that there's only so many functions, there's so many types of functions that we really actually compose. We still add and multiply, maybe subtract and divide functions as well. I suppose we do look at these other weird bases. Bring in the weird bases besides E, right? I think I consider E the natural base for powers and logarithms. Even with unnatural bases, that you still have, what, really five cases. You are spared having to learn all the trig rules. It really boils down just those five. So, for example, something like this. The idea is to just break it up into cases. So the outer function is a negative one-half power. Right, the reciprocal makes it a negative power, the square root makes it a half power. So I can just use the rules pretty methodically to figure this thing out. This is, you know, how you teach a computer how to differentiate. This is how my calculator knows how to get these formulas. Pushing the rules forward. How course, sometimes you still need to remember some other rules. It's not all chain rules. There's still the sum and product rules. Sometimes you have to bring in another rule. Remember, oh yeah, a constant has derivative zero. But it's pretty mechanical. The chain rule again with the exponential. That's just, it's getting kind of boring. Anyways, let's skip to the end. Right? This is negative 2x. So. So you have negative 1/2 times negative 2x, which makes an x. Zero contributes nothing, so you get that. Okay. It's just a longer chain of steps if the function is more complicated. Want to turn in your homework?
Yes, but I just wondering if whatever you do today, will you be able to post it online or not?
So far, I've always posted online, haven't I?
Oh, yes, but I'm just checking since you're reviewing. It's because I have to take my St. Julius Division assignment, so I can't make it to class. I just came to turn in the assignment.
Okay. No worries. You'll see it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now, okay, so that's some old stuff. Remember these other rules, product rule and quotient rule, which are kind of complicated, yes? Well, you might remember the picture I drew with the rectangle for the product rule. There isn't really a good picture for the quotient rule. At least I'm not aware of one. I've tried to make my own using geometry, but it looks more complicated than just the algebraic formula. Now, remember last time, the derivative is an absolute rate of change. And then if you take the derivative, the absolute rate of change, and you divide it by the current value, right? That's a relative rate of change. Change relative to the current value. Right?
often expressed in percentage terms. Like you might say, my rate of change is 2%, meaning that my rate of change is 2% of my current value. So if my current value is 100 and my rate of change is 2%, then my absolute rate of change is 2. Now, the interesting thing about this, remember this, the logarithm rule combined with the chain rule says that the derivative of the logarithm is a relative rate of change. So this is another way of thinking about log scales and so on. Right? I did some different graphs last time. These three different graphs talk about different scales. And when you're graphing the vertical axis on a log scale and you keep the horizontal axis normal, slope, which you normally think of as your absolute rate of change, now becomes relative rate of change. So. Now, this is really cool because logarithms turn addition and multiplication turn multiplication into addition, and they turn division into subtraction. So, what if I take then the product rule, but divide it by the current value of the product, right? So this is a relative rate of change. Well, if you look here, you can check that you break this up into two fractions. In the first fraction, the g's will cancel. And in the second fraction, the f's will cancel. And doesn't that look like a nicer formula? Nice symmetry between these. And you can understand it in terms of the logarithm as well. There's two ways to get to that formula. The other way is you think of this as the logarithm. It's a derivative, right? Relative rate of change of f times g is equal to absolute rate of change of logarithm of f times g. But with logarithms, multiplication gets turned into addition. And so what do we have here? Well, we have the derivative of the log of f plus the derivative of the log of g. Oh, but that's going to be exactly f prime over f and g prime over g. So they're all the same. Okay. So this is really nice. Much nicer formula, in my opinion, for the product rule. And it generalizes, too. Like, what if you had the product of three things and they were all changing? Like, maybe you had a box and its length, width, and height were all changing at the same time and you wanted to know the change in the volume. Maybe you were imagining, what if I made them each longer by a centimeter? How much more space could I hold? You're imagining, you know, buying a slightly bigger box. You want to know what's the benefit in terms of volume. Well, it may not be obvious what the correct three-term product rule is, but it's pretty obvious what it's supposed to be here, right? You can probably guess that it's going to be f prime over f plus g prime over g plus h prime over h. And if you don't guess it, well, you could just look at the derivative of the logarithm. Remember, logarithms turn multiplication into addition. And so then you're taking the derivative of the sum of three logarithms, and so you just add the three derivatives, which are up there by the chain rule. So this technique here, right? Products, and as we'll see, quotients easier. It's called logarithmic differentiation. Things work very nicely because logarithms make multiplication and division easier. They may just make them addition and subtraction. Right? What if we had a quotient? Okay. So, if we look at the relative rate of change of the quotient, it might not be clear what's going to happen. You could mess around with this formula here, right? You could use the quotient rule, divide by f over g. You could very carefully cancel and break it up into two fractions. And you could, if you do the algebra right, you will get this. Just be careful. But it's much easier if you go the logarithm way. Logarithm turns the division into a subtraction. And then subtracting derivatives now. The derivative of the log of f is f prime over f. Derivative of the log of g is g prime over g. You get the same result as if you're very careful with the algebra. The point is, this is a much nicer looking rule, isn't it? The original quotient rule. Right? The only price you have to pay is that if you do want absolute rate of change, you eventually are going to have to go back and multiply by the current value to recover the absolute change. The same thing would happen with a product. But you get these very nice looking symmetrically, visually pleasing rules. Let's see. So I think the book undersells this technique. They should give it some more space, more time. In a business-focused class, you're thinking all the time about what? You're thinking about percentage growth, right? This or that financial asset or sales or profits are growing at this many percent, you know, per year. You're thinking that in those terms all the time, right? And those are all relative rates of change. Things are up this many percent, they're down this many percent. Those are relative rates of change. I've seen various economic models too, like looking at macroeconomics, and all the time one of the first things they'll do is replace all the variables like GDP, etc., with logarithms, because things like multiplication become addition. It makes it easier for them to get a little bit of intuition about how the different terms of their model affect each other. Thank you. So anyways, I gave you those patterns there, but we do need to fill in with a few examples. Make it a little more concrete. So, here, easy example, okay? Price increases by 2% and quantity sold decreases by 1%. Estimate the percentage change in revenue. So this is so much easier than it looks. So the derivatives are with respect to time t. Okay, so think of revenue, price, and quantity as all functions of time t. Right? So I guess if you like, I'll write it very explicitly like this: price depends on time, quantity sold depends on time. Right? So super easy, right? Okay, this is a relative rate of change, and this is the relative form of the product rule. Right? If you like, let me fill in explicitly what was the step I'm making there. That new way I wrote the product rule. Okay. This is really easy. All you have to do is add. Okay, price increases by 2%. Quantity sold decreases. So that's a negative change of 1% of the current quantity. Right? And all I have to do is add these. Revenue goes up by 1%. If these are instantaneous rates of change that we're talking about here, right? not just some estimates, right? But if these are all instantaneous rates of change, then this becomes an exact statement. If you're talking about an actual change of, last week compared to this week, we've gone up 2%, right? We're charging 2% more this week than last week, but comparing this week to last week, we're selling 1% fewer units. If it's an actual change of 2% and 1%, then this is just an approximate, right? But it's pretty good, at least for small percentages, right? Not if it was 20% and 10%, it'd be a little rougher. But that's why I put in estimate. If these were just rates, then this would become exact. Anyways, you see how easy it is? All I had to do was add. Okay. once I recognized that it was a product and that it was all relative rates, it became embarrassingly easy. Here's a quotient one. Let's see here. If total cost increases by 5% and production increases by 7%, what approximately is the change in unit, in average or unit cost, right? So we have to recognize that this is a quotient. Okay? So make up some numbers here. C equals, or make up some symbols. Right? C equals total cost. X equals production. Right? How many are made? And then let's call it A for average, right? That would just be your total cost divided by however many things you made. Right? So the average cost of each one of them. Quotient rule. But in relative form, it's so much easier. Again, these are all derivatives with respect to time. So the derivative of x is not 1, because I'm not taking the derivative of x with respect to x, I'm taking the derivative of x with respect to t, where t is time. Okay. Anyways, If you get used to these kind of problems, you don't even have to write down any math, really. You just say, it's a quotient, right? Total cost divided by production is average cost. So I just should subtract the percentages, right? 5% increase minus 7% increase equals negative 2%, right? A 2% decrease. So if it costs you 7% more to make 5% more widgets, then that means that you must, the fact that the total cost went up slower than production means, of course, that somehow you got more efficient on a per unit basis. And did you see it here? There must be a roughly 2% decrease in cost. And the other nice thing about this is you'll notice that, unlike in a lot of related rates of change problems that we did before, in those problems usually you needed about 4 numbers, right? You needed to know, say, 2 rates and 2 current values, right? Whereas here I only need to give you 2 numbers. I just gave you relative rates.
it worked, and I got away with it,
right? Because they were in these very special forms of products or quotients. This doesn't always work, because, say, a logarithm of an addition is not going to give you anything nice. A logarithm of multiplication or division, yeah, that works great. Logarithm of addition or subtraction, this won't give you enough information. But when things are in the nice product or quotient form, then you actually can pull this off. Here's an example where it's slightly more elaborate, but you can still use the logarithm trick. Okay? So remember, logarithms also do a nice thing to powers. Okay, so here's one where there's a power involved. Okay? So body mass index, BMI, is what? Okay. It is height in meters, let's call that H, divided by the square of mass in kilograms. Most of us have probably stopped growing in height, but I have children and they're still growing in height. They're still, you know, young. Here's an example. If your height increases, or if your kid's height increases 2%, and your mass increases 3%, what approximately is your percentage change in body mass index? So there's actually, just with those two numbers, since I phrased everything in percentage changes, there's actually enough information to solve the problem. You just have to use logarithms. Okay. So let's say that B is BMI. I already said H is height. Now let's say M is mass. Okay. Let me put a capital B, because a lot of times I use B for the base of the logarithm that's lowercase. But anyways, okay. So what's the formula? It says B is equal to height divided by square of mass. The units aren't going to matter because we're doing everything in percentage terms. Okay. Now let's look at the logarithm of B. That's what we need if we want the relative rate of change, right? The relative rate of change, which is something we can express in terms of percent, would be B prime over B. Right? Again, these are time derivatives. Okay. So this will be the derivative of the log of B. Now, I didn't give you a special rule to handle this more complicated one, but you can use logarithm rules to figure it out. Right? The logarithm of a quotient is the difference of the logarithms, right? Division gets turned into subtraction. And the other logarithm rule you need that we haven't used yet in this lecture is how logarithms work with powers. Logarithms turn powers into multiplication. Right? You can pull the two out. So now what do we have? Now we have a subtraction and a constant multiple. Well, when taking derivatives, subtraction and constant multiples are easy. Right? So we just take the derivative of each of the logarithm terms, and the subtraction and the constant multiple are just along for the ride. Okay. And this h prime over h, that's the relative change in height, which is 2%, or if you don't like percentages, 0.02. Right? And then the m prime over m is the relative rate of change of mass, which is 3%, or without percentages, that would be 0.03. What do we get?
-4.
I got that.
Okay, I did the math right, but I did the definition wrong, didn't I? I was expecting a -1. Is that okay? So you gotta switch the. Sorry about that. Just correct that. I did the calculus right there. I remember the definition of BMI wrong. So. Correction. It's the other way around. It's mass divided by height squared. Okay. So just switch the M and the H. So now you get... sorry about that little error there. Okay, so if you do it correctly, then you get 3% minus 2 times 2%. -1%. Basically, the correct BMI model is it basically imagines that a body is like a cylinder, and the base is constant. That's not quite the right model. It's an interesting little model. So, normally you think your mass should be proportional to your volume, which should grow proportionally to, you know, the cube, right, of some length, right? Like a box or a sphere, volume is proportional to a cube. But the idea is that in this model, they're not expecting a cube growth. They're expecting people to be get taller, but not get as wide. as wide as they are tall. So hence it's only a square law instead of a cube law. But there I had it all backwards. It would have been like a square root law. Because I flipped the M and the H. So it's your mass in kilograms divided by your squared height in meters. Let's see. Example where you can't use these logarithmic differentiation tricks. Okay. Not enough information here. Right? I mean, yes, you know, you can say, okay, profit is revenue minus cost, right? But then look at the information given. Relative change in revenue is 5%. Relative change in cost is 3%. And you might want to do some trick here and think, oh yeah, I'll just use logarithms, right? But there, the logarithm of a difference is not, there's no nice formula for that, okay? It's, in particular, it is not the difference of the logarithms. Okay. I mean, we already have seen that the logarithm of a quotient is the difference of the logarithms. So you can't answer this question as I've posed it. There's not enough information. What you really want to do is you want to know what are the current revenue and cost. If I tell you that, then we can answer this, right? So if we add more info, then we can answer. So if I tell you the current revenue is, say, 4,000, then you can figure out the absolute change in revenue, right? It's going to be 5% of the current revenue. So 5% of 4,000 is 200, I think. Yes. And how is cost changing? Well, it's 3% of 3,500. I gave you a current value, right? So multiply by 3, divide by 100, I think you get 105, right? And the right rule to use here is not this, right? This doesn't work. You want, you just use the regular old rule for subtracting derivatives, right? The derivative of a difference. If you want to be, you know, really emphasizing the pattern, right? I suppose you write it this way, right? But the point is that the derivative of a difference is the difference of the derivatives. So these relative rates of change are not always the most useful thing, right? If you're multiplying or dividing stuff or taking powers, then relative rates of change, percentage rates, are great. But if you're actually adding or subtracting stuff, like revenue minus cost, you would really rather have things in absolute terms, right? It's much better here to say revenue went up 200, cost went up 105, therefore profit went up 95. You just subtract the absolute changes, right? And if you wanted to get now a percentage change, you could, okay? Because if I've given you more info now, the current profit, right, is 4,000 minus 3,500 is equal to 500, right? Okay. So then if you really want a percentage rate of change, okay, take that derivative, the absolute rate of change of profit that we got, divide by the current rate, we get this, which is 0.19, or 19%, okay? So revenue increased 3%, total cost increased 3%, and profit went up 19%, right? If you tell that to somebody in some financial report or something, that this is going to make their heads scratch, right? 5%, 3%, how do you get 19%? Right? It's not a helpful way of thinking about stuff. Right? If you're thinking in terms of, you know, a subtraction, right? It's much more helpful to think about in terms of, okay, revenue went up 200, cost went up 105, profit the difference, therefore went up 95. Right? But if somebody tells you, oh yeah, 3% up revenue, or 3% up cost, 5% up revenue, 19% profit, it's so confusing. How do you get 19 from 5 and 3? I mean, it's correct, but it depends not just on the 5% and the 3%. It depended on what your revenue and your cost were, right? I mean, what if revenue and cost were currently equal, so that profit was currently zero, and then I suddenly switched to a slightly positive profit? Then profit went up infinity percent, right? Because anything divided by zero, right, is undefined, or infinity, if you like. So this stuff, as you can see, there's some very nice shortcuts. It makes some things very easy if you're actually doing multiplication or division or a power. But if you're adding or subtracting, then it's not going to work. You really need to know some absolute changes to figure it out. Questions or comments? Okay. Okay, so here's a little problem. Maybe you can do it in your head. I have a balloon. It's roughly a sphere. I blow a little more air into it. The radius of the sphere goes up by about 3%. Roughly how much bigger in percentage terms does the volume get? You know, like spheres, imagine it's a cube, right? If it's a cube and I make the radius of the cube 3% bigger, about how much bigger in percentage terms does the volume get? It's a third power, right? It doesn't matter whether it's a cube or a sphere, right? Like a cube, you know, volume is length cubed. I guess if you want to talk about the radius of a cube, maybe you should say it's the cube of 2 times the radius. If that's how you interpret radius. And remember, the geometry formulas are in Appendix C, right? Now, you might be a little worried about the 4/3 pi r, the 4/3 pi term here, but not a problem. Watch. Okay. Here we go. Basically, because it's a third power, you're going to multiply the 3% by 3. That's how you got it, right? If we are very careful, right? If we don't trust that intuition yet, we can work it out with the logarithms. You'll notice that there's a multiplication happening. The 4/3 pi is being multiplied by an r cubed. Okay. Now this is just a constant, right? 4/3 pi is always going to be 4/3 pi. 4 point something, I don't care. Whatever it is, right? But whatever it is, it's always the same. And when I take the logarithm and I get 1 point whatever, it's always going to be that number. This is a constant. So the derivative will be 0. And then we have to take the derivative of this thing. But it's not hard. If we know our logarithm rules and we pull out the power, now we use a constant multiple rule for derivatives, and then it's 3 times the relative rate of change. The radius. A ton of work, but that was only because I showed lots and lots of steps. The intuition there was right. Because it was a third power, a cube law, the percentage change got tripled. 3% went to 9%. And the constant multiple didn't matter, right? If I had done it with a cube,
do the same thing, right? What would it be? It would end up being well, you have a 2 there, so you end up with what? 2 cubed is 8, right?
2.
But then you just have the log of 8 plus 3 times the log of r. So you'd get 0 plus 3 times the relative rate of change of r, which again would be 3 times 3%, which would be 9, right? So if you're interested in relative rates of change, constant multiples don't matter, right? Here's another way to think about it. For both shapes, right, if you look at V prime over V, what is it actually? It's equal to some constant times r cubed, and we have to take the derivative of that, and then we're dividing by the same constant times r cubed, right? And you can factor the constant multiple out of the derivative, and then it cancels with the constant in the denominator. So you see, the constant multiples really don't matter if all you want is a relative rate of change. And then, yeah, this is which is going to be this, which will be the 9% again, right? Whether you want to think about as derivatives of constants or zero, or you want to think about as canceling constant multiples, you get the same result. That constant multiples don't matter. What matters is, are we multiplying, are we dividing, are we taking powers? Every time we got the same thing, 9%. Okay. Questions about this? I wrote a full board there, but at least one of you was able to do it in his head, right? So, if you have the concept of how these powers and so on interact with percentage changes, these problems can actually be very easy.
Okay, so let's make up some homework problems here. This is day 9. So this stuff is due after next week, right? Next week we'll do a review and a test, and the week, then the Tuesday after that, the third batch of homework will be due. Child's height increases by 4% and her BMI decreases by 1%. Estimate her change in mass. Again, this is a relative or percentage change, right? And remember, here's the correct definition. Related rates problem, you would say, okay, I need to know the current values of her height and BMI, right? But if you use this logarithms, then all you need are the relative changes to get this estimate. So I took the BMI problem we did before and I turned it around a little bit. Instead of giving you the height and mass and you find the BMI change, right? Now I'm giving you the height and BMI, and you find the mass change. If I told you revenue went up by 1.4% after we dropped prices by 0.5%, right. What does that tell you about the change in quantity sold? Okay. Again, I took the price quantity revenue problem we did before, and I turned it around, and I'm giving you. Instead of telling you what the quantity change is, this time I'm telling you the revenue change. And in both cases, I'm telling you the price change, and you have to figure out the third rate. another one. Let's imagine a cone has its radius increased by 2.5%. So it gets a little bit wider, but its height decreases by 2%. Estimate the relative change in its volume. Gets a little bit shorter, but it gets wider. So, not clear whether the volume goes up or down. You have to do a little bit of arithmetic.
Geometry formulas are in Appendix C.
Let's do a little bit more with this one. So you could answer all my questions so far using just logarithmic differentiation, relative rates of change, all expressed in percentage terms. But what if I want to know something about the surface area? Now you won't be able to get away with using logarithmic tricks. Area, you'll want to look up the surface area formula, and it's not something where the logarithm rules can save you. So you're going to have to do a traditional related rates problem. Right? Hence, I needed to give you two more pieces of data. Right? You, besides knowing these changes, now you also need to know the current values. Nah, that's fine. We'll quit. Okay. Any questions?
For number three?
Yes.
We do it throughout the formula from the volume of the cone, right?
Yeah, look up that formula. Yeah. And you should be able to use logarithms to do it all with just percentages. That's number three. Could do it using the current values from number four, but that is more work. It's easier if you use the logarithm trick.
All right, finished early.